Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is someone I've known for quite some time. He began drumming at age 3 and has been tearing it up on the kit going on 14 years. He joined his first band when he was only 10 years old and has been performing around the greater Pacific Northwest ever since. In high school, he performed in his school's symphonic wind ensemble and jazz band, for which he was first chair, and even won Best Soloist at the East Shore WMEA Jazz Festival in 2015 for his performance of Foom Foom Foom. His band is also currently gearing up to release its debut studio album and embark on its first ever tour this summer. So please welcome one of the weekend's biggest stands, winner of Bellevue Christian's Most Improved in 2013 to 2014, the drummer and cover art artist for DFI, my ADHD brother and bandmate, Jared Byerjohn.
Well, hello, hello.
Hello.
You had to mention the Foom Foom Foom, didn't you?
when I asked you when you won Best Soloist and you said, oh yeah, it was for Foom Foom Foom, there was no way it wasn't going in your intro. And then you tried to pivot and give me other accolades that you've won over the years, of which none had to do with music. So let's get down to it. You were born. Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Well, I don't remember the first few years, but yeah, started drumming at age 3.
Let's walk through that. Our mom gets our dad a drum kit.
Yeah.
And then you become the drummer.
Yeah.
So
mainly happened by mistake.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's your recollection of how you started drumming?
Let's see. I remember that the drum set on Christmas Day was covered in a nice pink blanket. I'm not sure how detailed you want me to go, but
go for it. We're in it now.
gift for our dad.
It's about 32 degrees. There was a pink blanket.
A nice draft went underneath the blanket, unveiling the electric drum set. Actually sitting in this room with the podcast right now.
Yeah, it is right over
in
there.
In the corner, collecting some dust.
I actually use it for demos.
Really?
You're welcome.
Oh, well, I use it to practice drumming sometimes. Oh, I want to wake the neighbors or mom or dad.
Oh, that's good to know. I'm glad to hear you actually practice.
Anyway, back to the story. I was about 3 years old. Mom got dad the set. For no known reason. It's not like he really drummed anyway.
I think he always like wanted to be a drummer, and mom was like, great, here's the opportunity.
Yeah, but he never touched it. So I guess it was like a few weeks later, he was sitting up in the bonus room, just kind of went up and tinkered on it, you know, the most a 3-year-old could possibly do. Maybe not even reach it.
I already have to correct your story. Mm-hmm. We were in the Woodenville house at the time. It wasn't upstairs yet. And you would walk in your underwear.
Ah, yes.
As 3 years old.
Yeah, and you would remember this more than
I
would.
Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted to hear your story. And then you would put it on the cartoon setting. Mm. And we would hear you like,
boing, boing,
because we
boing.
Had an amp. We didn't even have the headphones. Mom had an amp. And we'd hear like, boing, and then you just giggling. And then running around with sticks that were the size of your arms.
And you had your Fender at the time, right?
I did.
You did. So then, yeah.
But when we started playing together, you're right, it was upstairs when we moved.
In the Bellevue house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyways, what was the role of music in your life growing up?
Back when I was a young child.
Now you're just a grown child.
there was one time. I actually did this a lot.
There was music one time in my life.
Sounds.
You gotta understand how I was feeling. Cool breeze.
A lot. Pink blanket. No, but there were a lot of times at our last old Bellevue house where I ran around the living room in my underwear only. And I would.
We were fortunate if there was underwear, let's be real.
But we had like that giant DVD player that had like the disc, like the disc that held the discs. It looked like a giant microwave that held like 100 discs.
Yeah, it was a CD player.
Yes. Yeah. CD player.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And you could like spin the knob and it. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And it had like on the TV, like. The Grammys playlist, and right. And it had like Backstreet Boys and like Britney Spears and all that.
Oh man, I forgot about that. When people ask about about music, that should be my answer, because that was literally the whole catalog of everything we listened to was in that giant thing.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, okay, I set up this wooden chair that looks a lot like the one in this room, and I would pretend that was like an audience, and I would run around the room in a circle holding the karaoke mic that I had, lip syncing to the songs in my underwear, running around this room by myself.
And now he sings into a microphone behind a drum kit in his underwear to audiences. So not much has changed.
I think the most, what was it? I've never actually like played in my underwear, and I'm going to keep it that way.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way. I thought you were like, our next show, I'm walking out on stage.
What was it? That one show at Ground Zero in Bellevue, I took my shirt off, and that's the only time I've actually like taken it off.
Yeah, you were probably, 10 or 11 years old, and I remember you rip off your shirt, everyone starts screaming, you throw it into the crowd, and I see mom just like face-palming, like, oh no. You swung it around your head, threw it.
Yeah.
She was like, uh-oh, he's either going to be a musician or a stripper.
Yes. All of the above.
Yeah, well, anywho.
No, but yes, how did music play a role in my life like that? Early on, that's what I would do. And I would just get really, really into it. There was never a time I was like, not into it.
Probably burned a lot of calories too, just sprinting in that circle around the couch.
Yeah.
Probably spent 50% of my childhood running around that couch.
Yeah.
Those were the days. All right, we'll fast forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we had that drum set, but at the time you were 3, so you weren't in any lessons of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got started on piano.
Yes.
How long did that last?
I would say most of elementary school, but nothing past that.
Was it really that long? Did you do piano for that many years?
I did it probably up until 3rd or 4th grade.
Gotcha. So how would you say that impacted how you approach music? Because obviously you're very percussive.
Yeah, I'm a visual learner. So when I started memorizing all of the notes, like, face and every good boy does fine, all cars eat gas, thanks to Ken Roberts.
Yeah,
bless that man. He kind of engraved those in my head, and yeah, they kind of stuck with me today. And then when it comes to like xylophone and other percussive instruments, it kind of, those notes stuck with me obviously and hopefully throughout my high school years. Drum set music, it's put on the same plane, but it's not specific notes.
Yeah, so, it's on the same notation pad. But...
yeah. But when I would play xylophone and marimba and all those sorts of instruments, that was very helpful, especially when it came to like soloing during practices.
Yeah, nothing like a good old xylophone solo.
So obnoxious.
So I guess for someone who starts on piano, but they want to go to drums, how did you learn drum notation? Was it just, oh no, I have to learn this now? Or
mostly it was the rests.
Yeah.
Notes didn't really carry over when it came to playing the instrument. It was more like how the half rests and rests kind of carried over, and how to hesitate and half beats and all that transferred over. And then when I went into jazz, the jazz band from freshman to senior year of high school, that actually helped annotate how I play now, like how hard I play, how soft I play. And so, yeah, I guess like how that carried over, it was mainly the rest, not even the notes.
Yeah. Well, so you bring up an interesting point of you went to jazz and it kind of changed how you play. So one thing as a musician that I appreciate about you, you're still trash, don't worry, is that you play very dynamically. Like you'll get quiet for parts and then you'll erupt back in. Whereas I think a lot of drummers, especially in like the rock genre, will just play loud the whole time kind of thing. And their version of dynamics is playing or not playing or pulling things out. Yeah. So what did you take away from jazz, or how did that influence you as a drummer?
The conservation of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gathering my chi. No. No, actually the conservation of energy part's true though, because when I played a lot beforehand, yeah, I would hit hard and like, and I would play soft, but there was no true meaning behind why I would do it. Now after jazz, like even in our cover for Hard to Handle with DFI, when Andrew and I kind of settled down, I could play that for like hours on end and I wouldn't get tired. Unlike if I were to play like a chorus of like Silent Killer or Moonlight Swing nonstop.
Yeah.
But yeah, it mainly helped me last longer and not get calluses and blisters as fast.
Yeah. As he holds up his hand with a previously bloodied up finger from our show the other night. So that's interesting. Did your teacher or conductor teach you that conservation of energy kind of thing? Like, how did you learn, or yeah, how did you learn to kind of balance all that out?
I did not learn it from my teacher. Yeah. She wasn't exactly a percussionist. So, it was learning from other instruments around me. So I had a guitar player in front of me, and I had two guitar players in front of me my last 2 years. But it was, what you're supposed to do is a call and response in jazz. So instead of just always playing a same volume, it came down to, oh, how do I best match that person's like message that they're trying to send? Mm-hmm. So then as if someone else is soloing, I have to give them the spotlight. So I have to tone down, but also be there for them. So drums are a loud instrument. I don't have to play loud or the same pitch. So if I'm quiet, people are still going to hear me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jazz songs can be quite long. So conservation of energy, going back to like feeding off of how other people are playing was very important, and actually still is.
Yeah.
So
with that, when you were performing, you do these like longer sets with jazz and whatnot. Were you writing your own parts, or were you given parts to read, a combination of both, because jazz is so improvisational?
Yeah, it was the latter. So mix of both. They would give you the beat that the song goes with, but then they just kind of have like the little percent sign that where it shows a repeat of measures. And as the song kind of goes on, you mix it up because you don't want to be the same and you don't want to lull the audience to sleep. So a bit of half and half. When people solo, you keep that beat going. But if you're hitting a chorus, like you got to fill in those fills every once in a while, mix it up, keep people engaged. Going back to half rests.
Yeah.
Those are very important. so like mixing it up, different breaks and all that kind of added up, and you mix it all into one song, it makes the song very dynamic and interesting.
Right.
And then overall different songs have different tempos. So that kind of like added more room to explore in that spectrum.
Yeah. So for someone who maybe has a drum kit but has never participated in an official like jazz band, what would your advice be to them when stepping in for the first time?
That's my last 2 years, I was kind of a mentor for younger kids that were coming up into the jazz program.
Weird flex, but okay.
Don't mind me. Brushes off shoulder. I would definitely say it's not for everyone, even not for all drummers, because a lot of drummers just kind of want to be thrashy and hit hard.
Yeah.
Jazz is definitely more articulate. And kind of as it goes on, you get more used to it. At first, to be honest, I thought jazz was a bit boring. But I love the improvisational part.
Yeah.
And we want to rephrase the last part of that question that you said.
What would you like me to rephrase it to?
Or just repeat it.
So for someone who has decided they want to do jazz, what would your advice be if they've never been trained in it or anything like that? Mm-hmm. The drummer's going to sit down day one. If you were to be like, here's the things you need to look out for, or here's how you should approach it. You already kind of talked about how important it is to listen to what others are doing, but what would your advice to someone about to begin learning jazz drums be?
Relax.
Yeah.
Don't be so uptight. I see a lot of drummers are extremely stiff. And just kind of like sit back, relax. You're not going to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. So everyone is kind of their own spotlight at different portions. So relax, I would definitely say, is the biggest part. Not be too noodly, but but you definitely want to have like a form that can be manipulated. And like,
I guess, what do you mean by that?
Adjustable, I guess, is a better,
like your hands or elbow positioning or
when everything,
because we're kind of motioning to each other, but but this is a listening show.
I would say make sure that you're sturdy in positioning, but you're not like too messy.
So when you say sturdy, do you mean like sitting up straight,
arms? Yeah, definitely sit up straight so you have movement in your arms. But when, like, if you hit a tom or a snare, you want to like bounce off of it. You want to be light, like a feather, but don't like smack and just have your hands sitting there.
So I guess when you kind of came out of jazz, well, you were in our band at the time, you were also doing jazz. Did it change how you played, or did you keep them kind of separate?
Yeah, it did change. Initially, when I first started in DFI, looking back at old videos, I'm like, oh no. My wrist positioning was off. Stressful. I was stiff, but also a big portion is the wrist positioning. John Ritchie, my last drum teacher, taught me keep your wrist facing down. Don't have it like up and down,
like square to the ground.
Yeah, square to the ground. So that way you have more up and down movement, and it actually loses a lot less energy. And so as that, in jazz, you're moving a lot in jazz, doing lots like that movement. If you have your wrist up and down, it's going to be very tiring, and sometimes your wrist could actually even hurt.
I was gonna say that could lead to a lot of like, probably like tension up in there, like arthritis,
carpal tunnel and stuff.
Yeah,
like
you heard a lot of drummers that get.
Yeah. And over time, like with the band after jazz ended, I was able to move a lot faster, like faster fills. Even like on SF-1, how I do the ride and I hit the bell at some parts to accent, it's a lot easier to do that now. And even coming in like slightly after guitar, like after vocals, and hitting a crash on two, like just a little bit after, and it still has that nice fluency and the phrasing still works. Like, it mixes it up, so it's not always like, oh, crash on one every single time. Kind of like to trick your listeners a bit. So I guess that's kind of how the jazz changed my performance level in general.
When you write songs or write your pieces to songs, do you just kind of go with what you're feeling? I know you obviously like revise stuff a bunch, but when you're writing, are you just like, this is what feels right? Or are you also kind of thinking mathematic, like this is where I want to be placing these certain things?
I definitely set down like the base formula for my beat. And then once I get that very stripped down beat, I can build on top of it. So it's like setting a foundation, kind of like building a house. I got the foundation, which is like, oh, bass drum, hi-hat, snare, set all that up. And then you can add like the walls, and the walls are like maybe a little bit of a cymbal hits and ride and some fills. But then you kind of mix it up, but don't make it too obnoxious.
Right.
So, but yeah, it's definitely like build it from the floor up.
Time to stump you. If you could only build a kit out of five pieces, what would you pick?
Hi-hat. Wait, are you including cymbals in this matter?
Yes. You get five pieces.
Like five objects of the set total?
Yes.
Okay, bass drum, snare drum, hi-hat. This is stumping.
Yeah.
If that's even a word.
Stumping. Yeah, it is.
Okay, stumping. Okay, yes.
No, it's not.
Damn it. actually, I'm going to go back a bit. Bass drum, snare drum, hi-hat, high tom, low tom.
Cool. There's actually a Git Stump section later I have, but being that you haven't listened to my podcast...
No, I'm a huge fan.
You wouldn't know that I cut up the order. We'll talk later. So I guess we can kind of jump in. We talked a little bit about the writing and such. Snap to 8 years into your playing. You play your first show, which is Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. Here we are in 2019.
Mm-hmm. What about it?
So, not many people start performing that young in a band. Mm-hmm. I feel like people join school band, but you actually joined a rock band first. Mm-hmm. How has that performance background gotten you to where you are today? Because you seem very comfortable on stage. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Are you comfortable on stage, or is it just you've experienced it so many times you know how to kind of just focus even when you're uncomfortable?
Very first show, I had a shaved head.
You did have a shaved
because
head.
Of good old lice. Good old elementary school.
You were so upset.
I was growing my hair out for the show. My mom was like, do you want a haircut? I'm like, no!
It was a very big deal. And then lice hits BCS. I remember you're like, can I just wait a week? And your mom's like, no. Shaving your head, coconut shampoo. Like, but my hair, I grew it out for the show.
But yes.
My big moment.
Before that show, I remember Brent Fosner did the promo video for that show.
Yeah.
And it was more like a nervous, like happy energy. And just kind of going up there, we kind of knew we didn't have anything to lose going up there. We're just like, oh, first show, not much of a following. Let's just wing it.
Yeah.
Okay. And like, well, I remember you playing Angel and you screwed up a note, but you were laughing because you screwed up a note. And now that we're kind of expanding and how it's evolved now, I wouldn't say I have that nervous energy. It's more of that excitement energy.
Yeah.
That kind of, I'm like, oh, I want to get on stage. Like, I want to, like, now.
Right.
I feel like that's kind of been the only thing that's truly evolved up there, like going from a nervous energy to an excited energy. And knowing what we can do up there now. I mean, we're still evolving.
Right.
But we kind of found how we feel up on that stage and what it's like. Even when we mess up, we just kind of look at each other and like just move on.
Right.
Because no one else is going to really know.
Yeah, we've gotten really good at catching our mistakes.
Yeah.
Or improvising. Do you think your jazz background plays into that?
Oh, for sure. In jazz, there's lots of hesitation, even if it's on purpose. And so when those two things, when you hesitate on purpose or by accident, it's going to blend together and the audience isn't going to know. Whether it's like putting a fill in while the other person is waiting to catch up. Or
that didn't happen the other day.
No,
I didn't screw up. You screwed up.
Looks around.
So you're getting ready to release a record.
Mm-hmm.
You've already released an EP and a single.
Hell yeah.
But it was the first time going into an actual studio. We had previously recorded everything in a basement. Mm-hmm. Into Pro Tools,
you
but
can't
in a basement.
Tell whatsoever.
What was that like going from a complete DIY setup to a studio? And what do you wish you had known going into the real studio for the first time?
It's going to take lots of time.
Yeah.
The basement, it's kind of like there's positives and negatives to both.
Right.
The negative for the basement, it's like I literally have to move my set to one side of the room from where it was before, against a wall, and my headphones are wrapped around the corner of a room.
Yeah.
So, like, the neat thing is, like, oh, let's just record this tomorrow. We can wait.
Right.
When it came to the studio, yes, the studio was much nicer. And the sound of the set, like, looking back, like, the acoustics of the basement were
trash.
Yeah, in nice terms. everything was like kind of compressed, whereas like we went into this like nice wood studio and it's roomy sounding and it warms up and there's echo and the negatives of a studio were no breaks. Yeah. Well, keep going.
Yeah. Well, that was partially my fault for scheduling. We work, or it was your finals week. Mm-hmm. And so as you came back and we thought we had 2 days, and then it was Father's Day, so the studio is only available one day, and we didn't know when it was going to be available again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that's something we changed.
I think the thing I should have fully known going in when transferring was hitting everything at the exact same volume, no matter how tired you are. Because like live, you can hit a snare slightly quieter and have like this nice ambiance effect. But when you go into a studio, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Quiet part, hit hard.
Yeah.
And yeah, by the end, when your hands are bleeding and they're bruised and every single knuckle is about to fall off, and you still have to hit at the same volume as you did the very first song after 12 hours of drumming with 1 hour break for Mod Pizza, which, for those who don't know what pizza is, you have to eat with your hands.
Yeah. So I guess what you're saying here is be prepared to do your parts, have the energy, and maybe plan a few days.
One try 12 to do hour it in one. Session.
Yeah.
Yeah, and listen to the guy who's recording you.
Yeah.
Like, for those who are going to record an album with someone else, listen to them. Because there was a part where I was getting so frustrated. I was like, I probably sound like a little spoiled brat. I'm like, no, I've been playing this song for like 10 years. I know how it goes. It was Break Free. And like, and I had always done this beat for 10 years. And then he tells me to change it for studio purposes and drive. And I'm like, no, I know how it goes.
Right.
And he's just like, no, it's not how it's going to go. And you're going to play it this way. And I was getting so frustrated because I couldn't play my own song that he's changing. But looking back, I'm glad he did it.
Yeah.
Because it sounds much better and it has a lot more drive. It's not as a hiccupy. It doesn't look like it's having a bunch of hiccups at the song. So, yeah.
So what you would say is just kind of open to other ideas.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. That's very key. Relax and be open.
Yeah. How did going into the studio impact live, or did it? Like, did you approach how you played live differently because of kind of going through the boot camp that is recording in a studio?
I wouldn't say energy wise, but for example, Break Free. I've been playing Break Free differently ever since.
Right.
And I've been playing some parts of Silent Killer differently ever since. So it's more of like, wow, this sounds much better on a record. I want to not do the exact same live because people don't want to hear the exact same on a CD as they would live. But when it comes to bassline beats, Break Free with the constant hi-hat is much better than when it was before.
Right.
And it's got that drive. And I notice when I do that, more people in the audience and the crowd start like jumping up and down a lot more often.
Oh, interesting. So you've noticed like how people receive the songs differently.
Yeah. Mm. So it's like they feel that groove there. A lot of people who listen to music nowadays, like especially with pop music, it's always at 2 and 4. So it's like, as much as I don't appreciate how everything's the same beat nowadays, that drive is there in that song, Break Free. In general, I wouldn't say my play style has changed or like, or anything like that, because I'm not going to hit the same volume like I would in a studio.
Right.
But beats for sure.
Do you write your parts differently now that you had that experience and you're like, oh, this is what was good for the song?
I'd say it's still somewhat the same. I will take into account, like, if I were to record this in a studio, try not to be too busy or complicated.
Because
if that's the case, you don't want it to be too soupy.
Right.
And as a result, I would say I've actually played a little bit simpler as a bass line. So when I'm starting out jamming to something, yeah, well, if we get the foundation down, I won't try and be too complicated because we want the song to evolve first and then later build on top of that.
Add the bells and whistles.
Yeah. And then if we go into a studio with that said song, then whoever the whoever is recording it can make changes, and then we'll see how it sounds from there.
Right.
So it's like I want to get comfortable with how I feel about it first. Yeah. That way I can nail it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe get taught something else later.
Gotcha. Yeah. So how would you approach things differently next time?
Practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it honestly depends on how much studio time you have and how saturated that time is going to be. Because if it's like my situation where it's like, oh, you're back from college, summer break's going to start with tomorrow, you're going to spend 12 hours in a studio. And the first day that you come back from school, you're going to be setting up for 4 hours. But if it was more spread out, say if we had like 3 days of 4 hours, I'd just say practice and maybe go in normal. And then if the recorder is just like, hey, do this next time, practice that.
Gotcha. So actually, like, cool, if we're going to change stuff, let me take that back, practice it, go to something else, and then come back to that song.
Yeah, because you don't want to spend too much time in the studio with the practice part. Because
it's pan hourly.
Yep.
So I guess what you're saying, your advice is kind of practice more outside of the studio, get things ready, and that when you go into the studio, just bang it out, call it good. Well, cool. And so one thing before we get to the Get Stumped section, even though I already stumped you once... you listen to like a lot of pop and hip hop, which is funny because a lot of people who would
don't forget R&B.
Oh, sorry, yes, and R&B. it makes sense to me now because you're a very rhythmic person. Mm-hmm. But people who listen to, you know, a rock band aren't going to go, oh, that drummer listens to a lot of hip hop. But what draws you? And I think I know the answer to this, but what draws you to like R&B and hip hop and pop? And how do you, well, yeah, I'll leave that open.
So like, I actually didn't really get into hip hop and like R&B and all that, until freshman year of high school, which is ironically when I started jazz.
That is funny. I didn't even put those two together.
But yeah, I discovered, I mean, an artist I still listen to today, The Weeknd. It's like the beats, especially from his older stuff, like House of Balloons was one of his first albums, or his first three, which together make Trilogy. And all that stuff has the most like unique beats, and sometimes he even uses like the sound of a lightning storm as his beat. And to me, it's like, wow, this is something so new and things that people don't do at all. Like, it's something just so unusual. So to me, it's like, wow, if I could learn to drum along to this, because this is like, there's no 2 and 4 thumping sound, or there's nothing that's so stagnant. It's all just so sporadic and out of this world, like esque vibe. And so his, and I guess as that evolved, like he's just got like a fantastic voice, so as a result that kind of like made me more comfortable singing, because initially I still don't like singing in front of a ton of people, but initially I just refused to sing in front of anyone. But yeah, like I have a drumming playlist on Spotify that I drum along to. And originally I had like Alter Bridge and like these hard rock bands. And I was like, you know, I gotta mix this up a bit to be a little more, have a little more variety to my style. So I started adding the R&B and the hip hops. And I'm like, this can tamper with my jazz a little bit. So I started messing around on the electric set up here. And, that kind of evolved in how like how touch really matters on the drum set, and like how you hit a cymbal, like slapping the cymbal instead of hammering
easy
down
there.
On
this
it.
This is a child friendly podcast, family friendly podcast.
But yeah, it's kind of like form and sound and kind of like how that evolved, and it's just honestly it's mood dependent. I've been listening to a lot of Pretty Reckless the past few weeks.
So would you say what drew you kind of the R&B pop and all that was just more experimental on the beat and ambiance front?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as much as it kills me to say it, it is probably true that rock drumming hasn't evolved much.
What are you talking about?
Like
AC/DC always has the 2/4. Oh.
But, cool.
Still got mad love for AC/DC.
Oh, yes.
Don't get me wrong there.
Yeah. Well, so that's something interesting. If you were to describe your style to someone or the music that you write how would you describe it to someone?
My style?
Yeah, your drumming style and then your band style.
So I used to not have an answer for this until Joshua, the guy who opened for us at Tim's Tavern.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Joshua Utick.
Yeah, he said... yeah, I didn't really have an answer for that until he came up to me and he was like, oh, yeah, your drumming style, it's like... you've got, like, the speed of punk with, like, the variety of jazz.
Interesting.
So, to me, I was like, wow.
Jazzy
like,
punk jazz. Paz.
New band name, Paz.
Junk. How would you describe Jared's drumming style?
Junk. I'm going to use that from now on. No, but yeah, and I kind of was like, huh, I've never heard that before, and I've actually been using that, so thank you, Joshua.
Thank you, Josh, for showing Jared his junk.
Remember, family-friendly podcast here.
Yeah, it's an abbreviation, punk. Yeah, or whatever. this isn't an English lit podcast, words. Okay?
No, but yeah, as I kind of took that feedback and I listened back to some of the stuff and how I perform, it's like, yeah, some of my fills can be really fast and some of them can be a little more, like I said, the half beats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ding, 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 ding. And then going back down, it makes a lot of sense now because I used to not have an answer for that. But.
Right. And how do you feel that plays into the style of the band?
Well.
Trick question, it doesn't. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Stumped again. No, but
I add value.
I guess it adds room for expansion.
How so?
Substation.
Substation. What about substation?
A few weeks or like a week or two ago when we were with Andrew during my spring break.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We kind of had that new riff that's like bluesy, mm-hmm. but at the same time, the we had a bluesy guitar,
mm-hmm.
with a like a very driven bass line.
It was kind of like a I don't know how to describe it. It was modern contemporary like rock
and
bass
like,
line.
The drum, my drums were a bit jazzy, but. Yeah, it's like jazzy, but like the fills were also fast.
Right.
So, yeah, like that junk vibe. Jazzy punk. So, it sounded like junk.
Wow, you're really trashing your band. No, it's a good thing. No, what's
not,
your favorite genre?
Trash.
Junk.
So, yeah, I guess that it makes it. Add variety.
Yeah. Very cool.
For sure.
All right. Well, before we get to the get stumped section, I guess, what are you allowed to say about, I know there's a couple announcements we can't, or you can't give out yet, but what should people expect from you and your band moving forward? And what are you most excited about?
Most excited. Branching out for sure.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like we had this long break of, oh, we're in the studio recording. We used to like do some shows, like 2 shows a year. And then now it's like, okay, we're cracking down. We got this album set up. We're setting up these shows and not sure what shows I'm allowed to say, but I know one
for
sure. We can
probably talk about the one
May 17th. North.
There you go.
Bellingham, Washington at the Makeshift.
Hey.
I know that one for sure. Yeah, I mean, so.
First out of town gig.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Mm. Well, official venue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we've played in Eugene, Oregon.
Yes. And Chelan.
And Chelan. That's right.
We did private parties.
but yeah, now that it's like, wow, we're actually hauling ass to go up to.
We're hauling ass with our junk. And,
but yeah, like we're actually like have these venues set up, and to me that's like, it hasn't hit yet, but once it happens I'll feel like, wow, we actually just got a group of people to show up outside of Seattle and Bellevue area. Right. Yeah, setting up summer
plans.
There
is an album dropping.
Yes.
No official, no release date. Mm-hmm. Officially.
But yeah, like, maybe to me, when I talk to people about those summer plans, they're just kind of like, wow, you're hitting it off. Like, that's hard to do. And mm-hmm. I've talked to some of my professors at college and they're like, wow, that's like great planning that you and your brother have going.
Yes, I will go ahead and take the credit. You know, it's been a long road.
It is mostly Duncan's doing.
It's been a long road, and I just want to say thanks to my fans. And really, this was all me. Jared has nothing to do with...
Don't worry, I take as much part in it as I do your podcast.
Oh, do you want to answer that?
I'm a great fan of his podcast.
Oh, yeah, I listen to it every day. So I guess one thing we forgot to talk about that we'll jump back to very briefly here is you released an EP earlier this year. Mm-hmm. You mentioned album coming out later this year. What have you learned about the music business and yourself and the band as a whole after putting the EP out? I guess what was that experience like for you? And especially going from a DIY garage style to mm-hmm. kind of rebranding almost as here's the studio package.
Yeah. I feel like we didn't lose our image moving forward.
Oh, totally.
But I feel like it grew and evolved.
Right. Yes.
even like when it comes down to like photo shoots, we're just like, what do we want to look like?
Well, that's something that we actually talk about a lot on this podcast. You wouldn't know. is branding, which is funny. And I think the way we've started to kind of approach it as, or not started, but where we've really locked in is just like, we're going to be ourselves and see what happens. But it's the easiest marketing when it's, mm-hmm. this is who we are. But also something that we hadn't taken into account in the past was we need a bunch of content and doing photo shoots and whatnot. So I guess aside from the music, what have you learned about like the overall package that is a band from like visuals? Cause you also do the art mm-hmm. as well for our
yeah, like on the
albums.
DFI t-shirts, buy your merch now. Direct message, DFI music on Instagram.
But yes, so I guess you want to kind of briefly touch on that, like how you approach making the art, and then also when mm-hmm. we do a photo shoot, like what's going through your head? Like you did the EP art for So Far Away, mm-hmm. And you came and you did all the photography and the art or the actual text on it. Like, how did you approach that as far as creating those images?
I guess we're not a band that's like rock. Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm so testosterone filled and tough.
I was trying to find this kind of vibe that's like, we're not angsty, but we're not super lighthearted either.
Yeah, we're not void of emotion.
Yeah. So like we goof off on stage. So to me it's like when I found that picture I took of the flower, and used it for the shirt, it's like, wow, I wanted to find something that would be like, oh, someone would wear this. Mm-hmm. But it's not like, I don't know, we're not complicated. So
I'm probably the most complicated person ever. I don't know about you, but
I'm just saying, like, when it comes to a message we're trying to send out, we don't want people to like try and understand us,
right?
And like listen to our music and be like, what are they trying to say?
Yeah.
But and the same thing goes with our image. It's like, oh, we're out here, we're trying to no, but it's like, we don't want to feel like we're clashing,
right,
with anyone else. We're just kind of doing our own thing.
Yeah,
like our shirts, they're black and white. They don't clash with other colors typically. like I said, buy our merch at DFI Music.
So I guess what you're kind of getting at is when you were picking out, you were looking for what image aligns with the story we're telling.
Mm-hmm. Approachable.
Yeah. Flowers. But I thought it was a great job because the picture that you surfaced for So Far Away was train tracks going off into the distance kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I guess you want to talk through that a little bit of like what, when you saw that or.
Yeah. Well, I remember when you were asking for album art, I kind of spammed you a bunch of images that I had recently taken. And when you came across that railroad one, it was kind of like, oh, like, yeah, it's not railroad tracks isn't like in the middle of a desert,
right?
Like, off in the middle of nowhere. But it's like there's some kind of scenery to it. And it's interesting. Like, you don't have to just look at the train tracks. There's an environment to it.
Yeah, where'd you take that picture?
Teddy Bear Cove.
Teddy Bear Cove. Right. No bears.
No bears at Teddy Bear Cove. But yeah, up in Bellingham, Washington. Yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't know. When I looked at the picture, I was like, huh. Yeah, you get that sense of So Far Away.
Oh.
And like you're looking off in the distance, but at the same time, there's something off in that distance. There's something there when you're looking at the picture. Hence why the song is about a long distance relationship.
Oh,
there's something there off in the distance, but it's not like there's nothing.
Yeah.
There's some sort of a symbolic visual to it.
Yeah. Symbolicism. Very cool. Well, we're getting ready to wrap things up here. And it's time to stump you again. Ready? So I'm gonna give you two options, and you just gotta pick as fast as you can. You ready?
What am I supposed to?
It's your preferences, musical preferences, and I'm gonna give you two options, and you gotta on the spot tell me who you prefer.
Hold on, before we start.
Oh my goodness.
Action.
Khalid or The Weeknd?
Weeknd.
Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
Backstreet Boys or NSYNC?
Backstreet Boys.
Flock of Seagulls or Combro Chill?
Oh, gosh. I only know one song by each of them. Oh, God. Flock of Seagulls.
Oh, controversy. Bad Flower or The Pretty Reckless?
Pretty Reckless.
The Rev or Neil Sanderson from 3 Days Grace?
The Rev.
Interstellar or Dark Knight soundtrack?
Interstellar.
Ooh.
Okay, there's...
Oh.
I must explain.
Oh, nope. That's this.
I must explain.
This is not an explanation segment. This is a choices segment.
Fine. Interstellar is easier to do homework to. Anyway.
Okay. We're gonna round this out here. And my first question, we're gonna get a little personal and a little bit deeper. How grateful are you for me for launching your music career? I'm just kidding. So
good, because I'm not sure if you wanted to hear the answer to that one.
no gratitude. I just want to sing. How does your ADHD play into your music? And I actually say that in a serious way. Does it at all, or does music play into your ADHD?
Ooh, deep. It goes both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. ADHD. Sometimes a factor of ADHD can actually be minor OCD.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to jamming out on something and we nail it that day, I'll think back on it and then just be like, oh, crap. I should have done this. And like, but thankfully, we can go back and redo stuff.
Right.
Even if it's something minor, like in the studio, if I hit something that I didn't think sounded right, but it sounded right on the recording, before I officially hear it, I'll be like, I screwed up. Like, yeah. No. But going to the part where you say, does music help my ADHD, or how does music help my ADHD? It's kind of, if I'm sitting and doing nothing, Which
is this... probably like 90% of the time.
False.
You're right. 95% of the time.
You got me there. No, like I'll listen to music and I actually took a music class, like the history of rock and pop at Western. And part of it was like, try just sitting and listening to music, just doing nothing but just listening. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times I'll walk to the bus listening to music. I love walking to music. I can't mm-hmm. walk by myself without music.
Right, in the same way.
But I took my teacher's advice on that, and I sat in my room just listening to just all different types of genres. And there's a lot of stuff that you hear, whether it's like in the background of a song or whatnot, that you typically won't hear.
Interesting.
So I guess with my ADHD, not only is it keeping my mind busy, because a lot of times with ADHD, it's like you're always constantly thinking of something, like you jumble yourself up. But with music, you can always focus on one thing, whether it's the background or the forefront of the song.
Mm-hmm.
So. And I've actually...
So are you saying that it helps you focus and pick out new things? Mm-hmm. Or is it... Oh,
yeah. So, like, sometimes I'll actually change my opinion on a song. So, like, I'll really like a song at first. And then if I hear something in the background that actually kind of irritates me, I can't stop hearing that sound.
Uh-oh.
When I keep listening to it.
You're saying things that are making me start to think I have ADHD now.
So, well, I mean, Mom does think you do too.
Oh, no. The truth comes out. Breaking news.
Let's blame Mom. Yeah. I don't think Dad has it at all.
No. There's a song by Schoolboy Q, mm-hmm. And I'm blanking which one it is now. But there's like a snare sound that's way too loud and stuck in the middle. Oh. And it's like in the back, and when I hear it, that I can only hear that sound the rest of the song every time it comes on. And then I forget if I don't listen to it for once, it comes back and I hear it and I'm like, oh no, this is it.
Yeah. But, it just like hits that funny nerve and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah. What sets your music apart?
From
it all. And that can be your drumming style or your band's music or any music that you're a part of. What sets it apart?
From other music?
Yes.
Playing it.
What sets your music apart from music? Do you mean from other music? No, what sets your music apart from the loaf of bread downstairs?
The loaf of bread is... not as stale as my drumming. Roasting myself. I don't know. You know, it's kind of like... I like playing along to my own music more than I like playing along to others, if that makes sense.
Why do you think that is?
That's the answer. Because it's my own sound. Question, but, it's like my drumming.
Mm.
It's my own sound. I'm not copying other or adjusting to other people's drumming. So I mean, that kind of sounds selfish, but
no. Not. Well, so I guess that's kind of getting back to my original question is mm-hmm. why is it more fun? And like, what is different about your style of drumming and the songs that you're creating than the other music you listen to?
If I am playing the exact same beat on verse one as I am verse two, I'm going to be upset at myself. If it's like the exact same bass drum, everything. So I have to mix it up. I don't want to go all the way as to say I get bored, but
it might be some ADHD there.
Yeah. It's just like, I have to, with my own drumming, I can mix it up.
Mm-hmm. So I guess is your answer to the question then, am I extrapolating this correctly, of what sets your music apart is mm-hmm. there's a little more variety in the delivery. A jazz professional is probably going to kick your ass if they hear this question, your answer to that.
No, it's like, I'm not going to say ours has more variety than anyone else's.
Right.
But it's like, for me personally, like my own drumming, I like coming up with my own things, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. I'm not going to say my variety has more than someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, oh, I I drummed along to my own song. I created this song.
Right.
The order of how I play, I'm playing to my own thing.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know, like someone, like even a jazz musician who writes their own stuff, mm-hmm. if they play another person's song all the time, they'd be like, wow, I didn't write this. This right. is someone else's stuff. But if they write their own thing, they can get into it. Like if you even slightly mess up, you can move on. It's like, you're not gonna be like, crap, I screwed up this other person's song.
Right.
I guess that's kind of what sets it apart. It's like, I can keep writing and keep adjusting to your writing.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what sets it apart for you, but mm-hmm. for a listener of your music, oh, yeah. what sets your sound apart from others? And that can be the band as a whole or mm-hmm. your drumming specifically.
My junk vibes. like jazzy punk.
Yeah.
It's... That's a tough question.
Yeah. I told you I was getting deep.
You're going to stump me now. it's just kind of... I don't know. Whenever I show someone else my music, I'm not sure if it's because I'm around them and they just want to compliment my sound. But I know people that have listened to it and like, wow, like one song off the album that has not been released yet is my favorite song. So they're like... wow, like I could listen to this. Not, I can't wait till this comes out. I'm like, awesome. But like, what makes it different? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, like, I don't know. Your band as a whole, you've got a singer who's got like a, like he can go gruff, but like he's got like a lower, like smoother voice. But you've got,
thank you, people.
But you've also got like, drums that are always different. So like each song has its own different vibe.
So back to that. I can edit that. So kind of going back to that variety of it's,
yeah.
there's a lot of flavors being put into the songs mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah. So like, Silent Kill, for example, our more angsty hard song. Whereas we've got, another song that has yet to be named that I can't say it because it hasn't been released. It has like twangier guitar. So it's like, although it still has a DFI sound, there's these little spices thrown throughout each song. It's not like you're going to have the same meal like 4 days in a row.
Right.
You're going to have a different meal every day.
But same chef.
Yes. Yes. Great analogy.
Deep. Deep. So if you were to write or perform in a different genre, you're in a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
What other genre would you play?
When I saw The Weeknd in Seattle, he had a live band with him. So to me, that's like, wow, a R&B pop artist playing with a live band. Wow, that's so unusual because everyone does stuff by machines now.
Right.
So that drummer was going ham. Like he was going nuts. I don't know his name, sadly.
But so you would want to do like that kind of,
yeah, because like they were just jamming R&B. Out. Yeah, they were jamming out, like they were having a blast. And when I was watching, I was like, dang, like, yeah, like it's that. Not rock, but it's you could technically put his drumming in a rock song and it would fit.
Right.
But he's playing along to R&B. So like to me, it's like if I could still have my own drumming style, but put it in a different genre, even if I have to slightly adjust without being too frustrated. That would be awesome.
Nice. So why do you make music?
Made for music. I see what you did there. Why do I make music? I guess it just kind of... Music has never given up on me.
Hey. That's a good answer.
Yeah. So like ups and downs, it stuck with me. During my ups and downs, I'm going to stick with music. So it's kind of like throughout my life, it's always been an escape, which is a very cliche answer. It's been an escape, but it's true. but yeah, it's kind of like when you listen to it, you know, you're not alone. Like mm-hmm. the artist is conveying to you that feeling. And it's like, wow, this artist hopefully has felt what they're writing.
Right.
And so to me, I make music as a means of not only to burn calories while drumming, keep some steady breathing patterns, lower heart rate, increase my circulatory system. All those facts about drumming. But yeah, I just really enjoy it. I like seeing people smile in not a Joker way. Just yeah. A genuine smile, like making them being the reason that they have a good time. Mm. Even though that sounds really narcissistic. Take that back.
I mean, when I would tell people, like, what's Jared? Like, I'm like probably the biggest narcissist you've ever met. So you already kind of touched on this, mm-hmm. I think, but what do you hope other people get out of your music?
That they relate. Because I don't want to be like sending this music into a dark void that no one's ever going to see or let alone relate to. So I guess when someone listens to it, they can come back to it if they're ever feeling that way, or go back to another song that sends another message. Because I don't want to be an artist who's like, oh, I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to listen to DFI today because I'm sad. And then like the next day they're like, wow, I just got a promotion, I'm going to not listen to DFI because they put me in a bad mood.
Right.
But I want to be able to provide all sorts of different emotions that can cater to different audiences or different feelings. So yeah, being able to relate.
Awesome.
But keeping rock and roll alive.
There you go. On that note, thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you. It was a long journey up the stairs, but
it was a lot of fun to talk to you in this format, and I appreciate you giving your insights and taking the time, and I will see you soon.
I'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Adidas.
That was She's Gonna Use Me by Deify, the remixed version from our debut studio album coming this summer. Details coming very soon, so be on the lookout. As far as shows, we're hitting Bellingham Friday, May 17th at the Makeshift Project with former podcast guest Evan DeVries and Lucas Tain. We're then hitting Seattle June 15th for a Hempfest showcase at the J&M Cafe in Pioneer Square. And if you dig what you hear, check out this week's Spotify playlist for your soundtrack to the episode, and be sure to rate Made for Music on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see you next time.